Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Janmadyasya yatom vayat itaratas chartesh vabhigyat swarat.
Janmadyasya yatom vayat itaratas chartesh vabhigyat swarat.
Tene brahma vidaya adi kavaye muhyanti yatsuraya.
Tene brahma vidaya adi kavaye muhyanti yatsuraya.
Tejo vari midam yata vinamayo yatra trisargo misha.
Tejo vari
Dāmna svena sadā nirasta kuhakam satyam param dhīmahi.
Dāmna svena sadā nirasta kuhakam satyam param dhīmahi.
Janmādhyasya yatom vayād itadatas chārtesh vigyak swarā.
Janmādhyasya yatom vayād itadatas chārtesh vigyak swarā.
Tene brahma vidaya adi kavaye muhyanti yatsuraya.
Tene brahma vidaya adi kavaye muhyanti yatsuraya.
Tejo vari midam yata vidamayo yatra trisargo misha. Dāmna svena sadā nirasta kuhakam satyam param dhīmahi.
Dāmna svena sadā nirasta kuhakam satyam param dhīmahi. Janmādhyasya yatom vayād itaratascārtesh vabhigyaswarāt.
Janmādhyasya yatom vayād itaratascārtesh vabhigyaswarāt. Tene brahma vidaya adi kavaye muhyanti yatsuraya.
Tejo vari midam yata vinimayo yatra trisargo misha.
Tejo vari midam yata vinimayo yatra trisargo misha. Dāmna svena sadā nirasta kuhakam satyam param dhīmahi. Janmādhyasya yatom vayād itaratascārtesh vabhigyaswarāt.
Tene brahma vidaya
adi kavaye muhyanti yatsuraya.
Tejo vari midam yata vinimayo yatra trisargo misha. Tejo vari midam yata vinimayo yatra trisargo misha. Dāmna svena sadā nirasta kuhakam satyam param dhīmahi. Dāmna svena sadā nirasta kuhakam satyam param dhīmahi. Janmādhyasya yatom vayād itaratascārtesh vabhigyaswarāt. Tene brahma vidaya adi kavaye muhyanti yatsuraya.
Param Dimahi Om. O my Lord, Namaha, offering my obeisances.
Keep that.
Almost. I thought that was the second one. Bhagavate. Under the personality of Godhead. Vasudevaya. Unto Vasudeva, the son of Vasudeva. O Lord Shri Krishna, the primeval Lord, Janma Adi, creation, sustenance, and destruction. Asya, of the manifested universes. Yataha, from whom Anvayat directly Itarataho indirectly Cha and Arteshu purposes Abhigya fully cognizant Swarat fully independent. Tene, imparted. Brahma, the Vedic knowledge. Vidha, consciousness of the heart. Yaha, one who. Adi Kavaye, unto the original created being. Muhyanti are illusioned. Yat about whom? Suraya great sages and demigods. Tejaha fire. Vari water. Ridam, earth, yata, as much as, vinimayaha, action and reaction, yatra, whereupon, trisargaha, three modes of creation, creative faculties. Amrisha. Almost factual. Damna. Along with all transcendental paraphernalia. Svena. Self-sufficiently. Sada. Always. Nirasta. Negation by absence. Kuhakam. Illusion. Satyam. Truth. Param. Absolute. Dimahi. I do meditate upon. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. O my Lord, Shri Krishna, son of Vasudeva, O all-pervading personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. I meditate upon Lord Shri Krishna because He is the absolute truth and the primeval cause of all causes of the creation, sustenance, and destruction of the manifested universes. He is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations, and he is independent because there is no cause beyond him. It is he only who first imparted the Vedic knowledge unto the heart of Brahmaji, the original living being. By him, even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion, as one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire, or land seen on water. Only because of him do the material universes, temporarily manifested by the reactions of the three modes of nature, appear factual, although they are unreal. I therefore meditate upon him, Lord Sri Krishna, who is eternally existent in the transcendental abode, which is forever free from the illusory representations of the material world. I meditate upon him, for he is the absolute truth. Beginning of the purport. Obeisances unto the personality of Godhead Vasudeva directly indicate Lord Krishna, who is the divine son of Vasudeva and Devaki. This fact will be more explicitly explained in the text of this work. Sri Vyasadeva asserts herein that Sri Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, and all others are his direct or indirect plenary portions or portions of the portions. Srila Jiva Goswami has even more explicitly explained the subject matter in his Krishna Sandarbha. And Brahma, the original living being, has explained the subject of Sri Krishna substantially in his treatise called Brahma Samhita. That's okay. Try that one. In the Samaveda Upanishad, it is also stated that Lord Sri Krishna is the divine son of Devaki. Therefore, in this prayer, the first proposition holds that Lord Sri Krishna is the primeval Lord. And if any transcendental nomenclature is to be understood as belonging to the absolute personality of Godhead, it must be the name indicated by the word Krishna, which means the all-attractive. In Bhagavad Gita, in many places, the Lord asserts himself to be the original personality of Godhead. And this is confirmed by Arjuna, and also by great sages like Narada, Vyasa, and many others. In the Padma Purana, it is also stated that out of the innumerable names of the Lord, the name Krishna is the principal one. Vasudeva indicates the plenary portion of the personality of Godhead, and all the different forms of the Lord being identical with Vasudeva are indicated in this text. The name Vasudeva particularly indicates the divine son of Vasudeva and Devaki. Sri Krishna is also meditated on by the Paramahamsas, who are the perfected ones among those in the renounced order of life. This is the Mangalacharana Shloka of Srimad Bhagavatam. We don't have to speculate, is it really part of the Bhagavatam? Sridhar Swami has commented on it as an actual verse of the Bhagavatam. Our criterion for deciding which is the actual text of the Bhagavatam is to accept those shlokas that were commented on by Sridhar Swami. Following the opinion of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we accept whatever Sridhar Swami says. So this verse is the actual first verse of the Bhagavatam. It was spoken by Vyasadeva, and it serves, together with the next two verses, as the Mangala Acharana, the invocation for auspiciousness. Three kinds of such invocation, or three purposes that can be served, are Ishtadeva Namaskar, Vastu Nirdesha, and Ashirvad. Offering obeisances and to one's worshipable deity. And second, indicating what is the subject matter of your text. And third, offering blessings to the readers. So the first two are served here, both, for two purposes. Vyasadeva is offering his obeisances to Krishna, Vasudeva, Satyam Param. And he's, by doing that, Prabhupada's pointing out that he's indicating that Krishna, the son of Devaki and Vasudeva, is the actual, or the prime subject matter of the Bhagavatam. And it is stated in the Garuda Purana, Pasho Yam Brahma Sutranam, and also Gayatri Pasha Rupasal, that this book, Bhagavatam, is, among many other things, it's a commentary on the Gayatri Mantra. And it's also, it's a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, and also on the Gayatri. The Gayatri is the seed mantra, or the original mantra from which expand all the Vedas. Of course, the seed is Om, but the Gayatri is the second expansion, Gayatri mantra. There is the Brahma Gayatri, this is the standard Gayatri mantra, but there's also the meter of the Gayatri. It's a particular meter, 24 and a half syllables, 24 syllables. What's the sign for 24? It's three feet of eight syllables each. This verse is not written in the Gayatri meter. It's not. In fact, there's no verse in the Bhagavatam written in the Gayatri meter. It's a Vedic meter. It has 3 feet. We don't have asymmetrical or 3 foot verses in the Bhagavatam or in the Puranas. That's a Vedic form. You can have 4 feet of eight, that makes an anushtup. But 24 syllables, each eight, three lines, you won't find that in classical Sanskrit. So the Gayatri is not literally present here, or is it literally present anywhere in the Bhagavatam, in its meter form. And the Brahma Gayatri is only alluded to here by the word Dhimahi at the end. That is taken from the Gayatri Mantra. So the one word is representing the Gayatri, Dhimahi. That Dhimahi is repeated near the end of the 12th canto also. Satyam Param Dhimahi, that's repeated. Beginning and end indicate what is the subject matter. A book may have many topics in it. According to the teachings of Mimamsa, Jaimini's Mimamsa, there are principles by which you can judge which of the many topics discussed in a book is the main topic. Upakrama upasamhara. There are six characteristics, but the first one is what is mentioned both in the beginning and the end of a book is likely to be, is the prime sign of the main topic. The thing that's mentioned at the beginning and the end. So Satyam Param is mentioned at the beginning and the end of the Bhagavatam. That Satyam Param is the topic of the Bhagavatam, the absolute truth. But this invocation has been prefixed by the mantra Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, which Sridhar Swami also comments on. He also accepts it as part of the text. It's not just something added on by a scribe. So the Satyam Param is identified as Vasudeva. And Prabhupada, following Sridhar Swami and Jiva Goswami, explains that Vasudeva indicates Krishna, the son of Vasudeva. There may be Vasudeva in Vaikuntha, who's not anybody's son, but actually the original Vasudeva is Krishna. That is taught in the Bhagavatam. Ete cham shakala pumsa Krishna's tu Bhagavan swayam. All these avatars, and then jivas who are vibhutis or manifestations of the opulences of God, representatives of the opulences of God. All these are amshas and kalas. Plenary expansions and expansions of the plenary expansions of the original personality of Godhead. But that original, who is he? Krishna's tu Bhagavan swayam. The original personality of Godhead is Krishna. That's stated in the third chapter of this canto by Suta Goswami. The word Krishna is not here in this verse, but this Krishna is prominent in the Bhagavatam. He has the whole 10th canto dedicated to him. He's also a center of focus later on in the first canto. Krishna and his past times, the final pastimes, Krishna with the Pandavas, and the impending separation of Krishna that the Pandavas are feeling, this is described in the first canto. In the beginning of the third canto, Uddhava has vivid recollections of Krishna that he relates to Vidura just after Krishna's disappearance. In the third canto, beginning. In the 11th canto, Krishna speaks elaborately the Uddhava Gita to Uddhava. Practically, a major part of the 11th canto is spoken by Krishna. So, Krishna is, even if you just measure by quantity, Krishna is the most prominent subject of the Bhagavatam. Other avatars are mentioned more or less briefly. Some are given a few chapters, some are given one chapter, some are only mentioned in one or a few verses. There are 33 avatars who have more than one verse of description in the Bhagavatam. But of them, Krishna is definitely the most prominent, even if you just count the 10th canto, which is exclusively dedicated to Krishna's lila. That is 4,900 and something verses, a good part of the Bhagavatam. So Krishna is, the fact is that Krishna is the prime focus of the Bhagavatam. This is Bhagavat Purana, but who is that Bhagavan? The Swayam Bhagavan is Krishna. Brahma Sutra is alluded to here, Vedanta Sutra, in the first three words. Janmadi Asya Yato. That is the second sutra of the Vedanta. The proposition is made, Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Now let us investigate what is the absolute truth. That is the statement of the subject matter of the Vedanta Sutra. And an initial definition of that absolute truth is given in the second sutra. Janmadi asya yataha. Now, those words are exactly repeated here in the beginning of this Mangalacharana verse. Because this is the authoritative definition of the absolute truth. It does not say everything about him, but it defines him as distinct from everything else. everybody else. No one but the Absolute Truth is the origin of everything, the source of the creation, the maintenance and destruction. You may worship Lord Shiva. You may think he's the source of creation, but he's only indirectly. He's only an agent. You may worship Lord Shiva as the giver of liberation, but he's only an authorized dealer in liberation. He's not the actual giver. He's only doing it, he's only able to give liberation because Krishna empowered him to. Arimvina naiva svitim taranti. Without the favor of Lord Hari, nobody can become free from the cycle of birth and death. So that defines Janmadi Asya Yataha, from which the Janma and so on of this comes. That is Satyam Param, the Absolute Truth, or Brahman. This means this visible world. You use the pronoun idam to describe what is visible. And what is more distant you call adas or atad. So this world that we see, we may not know what is God and what is the transcendental abode. We may not know what reality exists beyond what we see. But we do know that we see this world, we're living in it. It is a direct experience. We have direct experience of our own existence and of the existence of a world around us. And we seem to, and we have other people in this world accompanying us, and they seem to be living in the same world. That's our immediate natural experience. Beyond that, we may be confused, but at least we can all see. We're conscious of a world around us, and there are other people who seem to be living in the same world. They seem to be experiencing the same kind of world that we are. That is Asya, Idam, this visible world, the common experience of all of us. Philosophers can speculate about other worlds, but this world everybody knows. So a scientific philosopher will define the unknown in terms of the known. Not just build castles in the sky on no foundation. We take the foundation of the visible, known world. In terms of that, we can describe the unknown absolute. That, whatever it is, that is the source of the creation, maintenance, and destruction of all of this, that is the absolute truth. That is Vyasadeva's definition, and it's a very good definition. It distinguishes the absolute truth from everything else. Then we can talk more about the absolute truth, but at least we've pinned it down. We know what we're talking about. We want to book everything about cows for the cow lovers and the cow caretakers, the definitive textbook, everything you need to know about cows. But to be scientific, the book should start with an appropriate definition of a cow. If someone may be so ignorant, he doesn't know a cow from a horse or a flower. So we have to define a cow. Four-legged creature, living being, with a dewlap under his neck, her neck. That's a cow. So you won't, mistake that we're talking about horses or cats or elephants. This is cows. That has to be done first, definition of your topic. Then you can talk about cows. Then when you see a cow, you'll know what it is, and you'll be able to relate all the things you learned in the book to the fact. So absolute truth is defined here, janmadyasya yataha. And it's further explained by Vyasadeva here in the Bhagavatam. The same Vyasadeva who wrote the Vedanta Sutra is writing the commentary. And he says further, anvayadi taratas charteshu abhigyak swarat. What about that absolute truth? Does he have any qualities, or is it nothing with no qualities? Is it a living being, or just dead matter, or light, or love, or just the laws of mathematics? What is that absolute truth? Well, the absolute truth is abhigyak swarat. It is a person. It's all-knowing and all-powerful, Swara, independent and fully capable in all ways, Abhiga and Swarat. And he's that in two modes, Anvaya and Itaratas, indirectly and directly. On his own, he knows everything, and he knows everything through his agencies. Like us, the living entities. We are conscious, and God in our heart shares our consciousness. The demigods are conscious, they are the agents of God. They know on behalf of God, they collect information on behalf of God, and they act. They create, they maintain, and even create worlds on his behalf. The great demigods. So directly and indirectly, he knows everything and controls everything. That is Vyasadeva's own expansion of what he said originally in the Vedanta Sutra. And the Bhagavatam is going to go much further to expand that. In the Bhagavatam, the knowledge that is set forth in succinct form in philosophical codes for the philosophers is fully elaborated and given in graphic examples and stories within the Srimad Bhagavatam. Everything. This is not the book, everything you need to know about cows, but everything you need to know about Bhagavan, about the personality of Godhead. All the useful information that we need to know to establish ourselves as pure devotees, lovers of the Absolute Truth. That is given to us in the Srimad Bhagavatam. We don't need to know how the Supersoul gets inside every atom, what tricks he uses, or what mechanism. We're not trying to take the position of God ourselves or of the Supersoul. We don't need to learn, you know, the tricks of the trade, how to be the Supersoul, how to get inside atoms. That's his business. What Shaktis he uses to do that is his personal affair. That knowledge we don't need. We're not training up to become Bhagavan, we're training up to become Bhagavad Bhaktas. We need to know what the devotee requires to know about him. That is what is taught in the Bhagavatam. Vyasadeva wrote three major books, and the Bhagavatam was the last of them. He wrote the Vedanta Sutra, he wrote the Mahabharata, and then he wrote the Bhagavatam. Vyasadeva congratulated him. Or acknowledge, yes, you did good work in writing these other two books. Gigasitam aditam cha. Brahmayat tat sanatanam. Yes, you've described the eternal absolute truth in the Vedanta Sutra. Gigasitam susampanam. Apite maharat bhutam. Kritavan bharatam yastvam. Sararta paribhimitam. So Vedanta Sutra is written for the professional philosophers, for the well-educated brahmanas who can read these and understand this philosophy. Abstract understanding of the absolute truth. Not even giving him a name, just understanding the theoretical idea of what is God, what is the absolute truth. That is there for the philosophers in the Vedanta Sutra. Tata paramahamsanam kriti praise. Muninam amalatmanam. Bhakti yoga vidanartam. Katam pashema. Istriyaha. That's fine. For the paramahamsas. Muninam. For the great sages. Amalatmanam. Those whose hearts are pure. Bhakti yoga vidanartam. This may lead them, this philosophical understanding may lead them to pure devotion. But that's okay for them. But katam pashema histriya. How about us ignorant simple women? How are we going to see you? So for the benefit of Stri Shudra Dvija Banduna, Trayina Shruti Gochara. The Vedas are not accessible for to the Sri the Shudras and the Dvija Bandhus. So for their elevation and enlightenment, Vyasadeva produced the Mahabharata. Sarvarta Paripimitam. All the essential teachings of the Vedas, all the principles of Dharma that are relevant to human society, are explained in the Mahabharata, mostly in the form of stories and histories. So Vyasadeva wrote that second book, a very elaborate book, in which everything human beings need to know to live a successful life is available in that one book. So yes, Narada, his guru, told Vyasadeva, you've done well. You've compiled the Vedas, and then you wrote the Vedanta Sutra, and you wrote the Mahabharata. Tadapi shocha shatmanam. But still, you're unhappy. You're dissatisfied. And I know why. Yata dharma adeyas charta mudivaryanu kirtita natata vasudevasya mahima yanu varnita. You've explained dharma, artha, kama, moksha, the principles of human life. But what about the pure devotion to Vasudeva? What about the glories of the personality of Godhead? You haven't said very much about that. So please, go back to work. Now put on your thinking cap, sit down in meditation, and come up with the Srimad Bhagavatam, please. This was the order of Narada. And here, Vyasadeva, in his maturity, has contemplated the absolute truth in his meditation and seen it with his own eyes, with his energies. And now he's sitting down to write the Srimad Bhagavatam. And this is the first words that come out of his mouth. Okay, so I'll stop here. I'll continue tomorrow. I did one paragraph of the purport. Yes, sir. I don't think, well, I'm not going to give you a good answer. I'll say that I don't think that means that there's some missing verses that maybe get discovered someday. There might be a few verses missing. But if there are 4,000 or a few thousand verses missing, why didn't Sri Goswami say anything about them? He was satisfied to comment on 335 chapters and leave it at that. As he commented on a few less. He merged two chapters together in one place. He didn't say, oh, there's another 30 chapters missing. He never said that. So it's not that there are somewhere or were lost some extra, even thousands of verses. That's not the fact. We must be counting it wrong. There's different speculations about it. You know, you try to count the anushtups. That doesn't come out right. That's not enough either. So I can't give you a definite answer why this is. But I can't imagine that it could be the fact that there are thousands of verses of the Bhagavatam missing. There's some explanation. I don't know what it is. No, Gayatri means two. You've got anushtup. 32 syllables. You're going to count Gayatri, then you're going to have less than 10,000 shlokas. Gayatri is too long. You want to count Gayatri meter? I say 24 syllables.
Yeah.
I never tried that one. Yeah.
You count the syllables, then you come up with
8. Why Gayatri? The Gayatri mantra is not actually used in the Bhagavatam. Standard measurement is standard measurement for measuring books. Is the anushtup. Also, I think 1,000 anushtups is one granta. When you hire a scribe to copy a book, and you pay him by how many grantas he does, how many thousands of 32 syllable meters. You count the syllables, because it's not fair. If he's got a book with long verses, he's going to be paid less than if he does a book with short verses. So you count the number of syllables, and you pay him according to the number of anushtups, even if the meter he was copying was some other meter. You count the number of syllables. Divide by 32, that's how many verses. Divide by 1,000, that's how many gruntas. You pay him by the grunta. So that's a standard way of measuring. but 32 syllable units.
I don't know about entry according to Gayatri. I don't know about that system.
Yes. I guess you probably heard this one also, but the standard answer they give for that question is that there was one Bhagavatam commentator called Ganga Sahayana, and he...
What's his name?
His name's Ganga Sahayana. Yeah, his verse is not so famous, but he's quoted as the solution to this problem. And he said that, even when you take the Bhagavatam and you divide it up into syllables, you know, divide it by 32, take all the syllables of the Bhagavatam and divide it by 32, which is the Anustup verse, you still won't get 18,000. So he said what you have to do is you have to take all the uvachas, like the, you have to take all the, you know, Sri Shuka uvachas and all the iti, you know, pratamo jayahas, all those extra syllables, and when you take all them and add them into the total amount of syllables and then divide by 32, you get like something like 17,999 or something like that.
Really?
Yeah, it's very close to the... So that's the standard answer for how it is.
Okay. Is that good enough? I wish I got rid of those names first. Okay.
If that, with this counting of the Gayatri, and you said Anushtubh is a standard way of counting.
So yes.
You count, you get so much. But if it's already said by someone that, means if there's a way of deducing that Gayatri is the overall chandas, I don't know, because I read in that when Jiva Goswami was determining the chandas of Bhagavatam, he says, Chandatra Gayatri Tathaiva Arabdhatvat. He says, so because it begins like that, and then when we divide with Gayatri that 518,000 518,000 words, letters, then we get close to 18,000.
You do.
Yeah.
Okay, you can do that. I didn't know there was any precedent for dividing by the number of syllables in Gayatri.
Especially because Yoga Swami was saying that it's Chandatra Gayatri.
Okay.
Prabhuji, if an acharya is commenting on Bhagavatam, then should he have to necessarily comment on all the verses? Or if he leaves some of the verses, then should he mention that those verses that he is not commenting? Suppose if he comments on a particular batch of verses, and if he doesn't comment on others, then that means that he is acknowledging only those verses are there in the Bhagavatam. For example, in Madhvacharya's commentaries, it's only 1,000 verses is there, around 1,000. That means that he is not acknowledging the others, or...
But the commentators are not independent. In our sampradaya, Sridhar Swami is the basic first commentator. He's fixed the text. He's already done the job. So we don't need to do it again. It's not that every subsequent commentator also has to comment on every verse. Sridhar Swami has almost done that. He's left out a few verses. Not many. But he's commented in every chapter and most of the verses. So the later commentators in our line don't have to do that again. They can jump over verses. It's already been determined what's the text on the authority of Sridhar Swami. And those sampradayas that don't accept Sridhar Swami as an authority, they'll have to go by some other standard. Madhvacharya chose not to write a comment on every verse. He wrote a selective commentary on certain ideas, on certain verses. That was his style. That's okay. They have some other way in that sampradaya of determining what's the text of the Bhagavatam on some other authority.
Even Vijayatvajajita's commentaries, Prabhupada, sometimes he quotes that and says that in his commentary there's an extra verse here and extra verse there. So he adds up two verses in like one example I remember in Puranjana's story after that, there's few verses he adds. That means that if we add that also together, then it becomes a different number.
But he doesn't add very, I mean, there aren't many verses like that. The text used by, the text of the Bhagavatam read in the Madhva Sampradaya is somewhat different. Some verses are different, and there are some verses left out and some verses added. And once in a while, Prabhupada has mentioned that. He put it in the appendix. He didn't include in the, in most cases, didn't include right in the chapter, but after the chapter, in the appendix. But our opinion about what is the text of the Bhagavatam is based on Sridhar Swami's commentary in our line. Damodar Gopal.
Can we elaborate on the fact that Bhagavatam is eternal? And
Maybe we'll hold off on that. That's a major topic. Okay. And we go on too long for that. Discuss the eternality of the Bhagavatam according to Sridhar, according to Jiva Goswami. And I've discussed it before in classes, what he says in the Tatvasandarbha. I can repeat it, but it would take some time, and I've already said it. I can say it again later. Yeah. Yeah.
When this Bhagavatam, Vyasadev, when wrote this Bhagavatam, after the beginning of Kali Yuga or before Kali Yuga?
Well, technically it was a little before the Kali Yuga that he's carried out the order of his Guru. It must have been just before the end of the Dwarpa Yuga. He then recited it to his son Shukadeva. Then after that, after some time, some years later, Shukadeva recited it to Parikshit. That was after. The recitation to Parikshit was after the beginning of Kali Yuga because it's after the end of the battle of Kurukshetra. But the original, when Vyasadeva first spoke it, must have been, or when he sat down and meditated and received it in his meditation, must have been still in the Dwarpa Yuga. In the very end of the Dwarpa Yuga.
It's somewhere, because you mentioned now, first, Mahabharata he wrote, and after that Vedanta Sutra, and later on he wrote Bhagavatam. So somewhere I heard that it was only 5 days to begin Kali Yuga, and before five days Vyasadeva was trying to wrote Bhagavatam, and there are so much verses to wrote. He decided to somebody to come here and to write on this, because so he chose Ganesha. So to wrote.
I don't know where did he hear that, because Prabhupada said that Ganesha wrote the Mahabharata, but not the other books. Okay. Prabhupada's opinion is that Ganesha only wrote the Mahabharata.
Okay.
I don't know. You know, we can trace where that information comes from. Maybe we can.
I mean, there is no certainty. There is any.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't know if that's true that Ganesha wrote down the Mahabharata, the Bhagavatam. As far as I understand, it wasn't written down for quite some time. It was passed on by speaking it. Sudha Goswami heard it and he spoke it. It's not that there were printed copies available. You know, that the sages were reading along with the manuscripts. There weren't any manuscripts. It wasn't written down. It wasn't written down for a long time, maybe 1,000 years, before anybody wrote it down. That's what I understand. Maybe I'm wrong.
Okay. Can you please explain, is it correct statement that certain parts of Srimad Bhagavatam are commentaries to certain sutras of Vedanta Sutra? Is it correct statement or not?
Probably. One Vaishnava scholar in Vrindavan has written a book showing for every sutra in the Vedanta what verses in the Bhagavatam explain it. So there seems to be a lot of evidence that can be proven, that the Bhagavatam is explaining in detail, sutra by sutra, the Vedanta. Not impossible thing to do. It's the author of the Vedanta Sutras writing, who compiled the Bhagavatam, so he knows what his own Vedanta Sutra is about, and therefore the Bhagavatam can actually deal with everything that's said in the Vedanta Sutra. Same author is writing both books. Jiva Goswami in the Paramatma Sandarbha, or the Sarvasamvadini to the Paramatma Sandarbha, gives a sample of how the Bhagavatam is explaining the Vedanta Sutra, but he sticks to one chapter, I forget which one, 2-3 or 3-2, of the Vedanta, and shows elaborately how the Bhagavatam explains sutra by sutra. But he only does it for a sample, Jiva Goswami. This is before Baladeva Vidyabhushan wrote his commentary on Vedanta. We have Jiva Goswami's commentary on part of the Vedanta within the Sarvasamvadini on the Paramatma Sandarbha. Okay.
To show that the Vedanta Sutras, Bhagavatam can be shown to be a commentary on Vedanta Sutra, he wrote, he showed a sample, but he didn't go on and write and elaborate.
Yes.
So we have similarly, a similar thing done by Madhvacharya. What he did, he wrote a commentary on the first 40 suktas of Rig Veda and just told that anybody who is intelligent can figure out the meanings of the rest. He wanted to show that the Vedas have a spiritual purpose. So.
Yes, and someone later on elaborated further, went further.
Yeah, but because they didn't bother to write the whole thing and give up the whole thing, so the actual focus of spiritual life of a devotee who is fully convinced about the Siddhanta, it doesn't depend on these things. Like it's the focus is much more succinct, you can say, and it's not dependent on so many detailed.
Well, we should focus on the details that are presented in the Bhagavatam. We shouldn't say, well, I just chant Hare Krishna, I don't read books. You know, that's not, you don't want to be that succinct that you won't even look at the Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is too much stuff in it. No, we should assimilate the whole Bhagavatam. But Vedanta Sutra, we can live without. You know, we can perfect our lives without studying the Vedanta Sutra. I'm not saying we shouldn't ever study the Vedanta Sutra, but the Bhagavatam is the book that's going to save our lives. And it's not just for offering RT to. You're supposed to read it and read the whole thing and know it well. Then you've got some knowledge. Then you have been introduced to the absolute truth in person, face to face, in detail, if you assimilate what's taught in the Bhagavatam. So Bhagavatam has got special importance that eclipses all other books, including the Vedanta Sutra. Okay, anything else? Thank you, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.